Hello, this is the Elizabeth School District Board meeting for October 26, 2020. Test 1, 2, 3.
I'm going to call this board meeting to order. It is Monday, October 26, 2020. This is the working session of the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, and it is 6 o'clock p.m. Just a note, due to the weather, we have moved this meeting to remote. All parties are attending the meeting remotely, and the audio is still being live streamed. Could we get roll call, please?
I'm going to apologize. I'm going to go out of order. Director Hines?
Present.
Director Gutenberg?
Present.
Director Fumbeller?
Present.
Okay, would you?
Directors Karcher and Benkendorf are not present.
Okay, thank you.
And they had, they're not present with permission from the board.
Correct. Okay, would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Thanks, Kim. You're awesome. Okay, could we get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved with an amendment of the middle school showcase to move that to next month.
Okay.
Or for our next meeting.
Correct.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Hines.
Aye.
Gutenberg.
Aye.
Director Fumbeller.
Aye.
Okay, can we get a motion to approve the minutes from the board meeting of October 12th, 2020?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Gutenberg?
Abstain.
Director Fumbeller?
Yes.
Okay, so the motion does not pass. We don't have
quorum.
A quorum. So it'll just, the minutes will be brought forward to the next board meeting.
That'll work. Okay, next up we have communications with our superintendent update. Over count numbers.
All right. I just need to work on my screen here, so give me a second to pull up the report. Okay. And what I'm going to do is share the screen, and then this report will be available as a part of the board packet, board materials for everybody to access. So here we go. I need to clean up screen. There we go. So just if you could give me a thumbs up that you can see the class size report. Okay, good. So this is something that we do twice a year, once in the fall and then once in the spring. Shelley Scobie from our data specialist produces this report, and what it does is summarizes the policy as a starting place, and then it gives you a report of class sizes in each of the schools, and especially if any of the class sizes are above the recommended ratios. And so at the high school, the average class size is 15 students per class. The average size for core subject areas is 19. The student-teacher ratio for the entire school is 20-1. That's higher than either the average for the core or for all of the students, because at any given time, there's a certain percentage of teachers that aren't teaching students because they're on their plan period. There are no classes currently offered at the Elizabeth High School that exceed the recommended 30-1 ratio. The average class size for core subject areas are for language arts, 22, mathematics, 16, science, 17, and social studies, 21. At the end of the report, which we can review after we've gone through these highlights for each school, it shows each class. For the middle school, the average class size is 23 students per class. The student-teacher ratio for the school is 28-1. There are three classes at the middle school that exceed the recommended 30-1 ratio. Those classes are 8th grade web, which has 34 students, 6th grade geography, which has 31 students, and then 6th grade reading, which has 31 students. At Singing Hills, the average class size is 19 students per class. The student-teacher ratio is 16-1. And the recommended ratio varies by grade level. The kindergarten recommended ratio maximum is 24-1. It is currently 17-1. The first through third grade recommended is 25-1. It's currently 18-1. And the recommended for fourth to fifth grade is 28-1, and it's 19-1. For Running Creek Elementary School, the average class size is 19 students per class. The student-teacher ratio is 15-1. The recommended ratios are the same as previously mentioned, and just to reiterate, these do not include online students, meaning to say 100% online. They would include any student that was in the class in person that had to be shifted for remote temporarily. So I'll just repeat, the kindergarten recommended ratio is 24-1. The actual is 18-1. First through third grade, 25-1. The actual ratio is 18-1. And fourth and fifth grade, the recommended ratio maximum is 28-1, and it is currently 16-1. Those elementary numbers are fairly hard to manage, meaning to say it really depends on how many students enroll at each grade level and how many teachers we've contracted in the spring for the school overall, and then specifically for each grade. So we might move a teacher around that in the spring was assigned to teach, say, third grade, move them to a different grade level if there's a higher number of students, and we keep the overall student-teacher ratios down for the school by moving them from one grade to another. But that's really the only mechanism that we have, with the exception of hiring a new teacher, which we have done on occasion when our enrollment has exceeded what we projected at a particular grade level, and there is no teacher that we can move from a different grade level because of the increase to those class sizes. So the appendix has a further breakdown of each of the teachers, and also indicates how many students are online. Now, as you can see at Singing Hills, there's one student in Miss Carlisle's class that's online, and two in Mrs. Doolin's class. They are not per se interacting with those teachers. They're just been assigned to those teachers in our student data management system because they're working exclusively through Colorado Digital Learning Solutions for their online online courses. Because they are Elizabeth students, we not only assign them to the school, but to a particular teacher. But I just don't want you to believe to think that those teachers are actually directly teaching those students. So you can see the number of students that we have. If I just count here, there's 3, 4, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 online at Singing Hills. I had to do that counting because it does the report doesn't actually add up those numbers. So you can see Running Creek. And in some cases, we have 2 teachers per grade level. In other cases, we have 3. That fluctuates from year to year, depending on how many students are just in the class. What we have seen over the last decade is fewer students starting at the preschool and kindergarten level. And so we've seen a move from 4 classes per grade level to 3 classes to 2 classes. It's not been a smooth flow. It really depends on kind of who's moving into the area and how old the kids are. But generally, there's just been fewer families over the last decade moving into Elizabeth, more kids graduating from the schools, in part driven by the lack of development in the area. We expect to see a little bit more growth at the early years as the new homes that are being built, as families with young children move into them. If we look at the middle school, you can see each of the subject areas: computers, drama, technology, fine arts, language arts, music, science, social studies, physical education, etc., and the specific numbers of the students in each of those classes. Where we have multiple classes, for example, under science, 6th grade science, there are 5 sections of 6th grade science, and the average of those is 26. That's what that number is. One class may have 27, another class may have 25. Anytime that the number exceeds the recommended number, that's what shows up in the earlier part of the report where we said which classes exceed the recommended numbers. In the averages, you won't see those numbers because it's an average. One of the things that is both, I would say it's encouraging, but it is, not what we'll see in some of our larger suburban neighboring districts is class sizes, in the mid 20s or even 27 or 28. They've approached the school year with a hybrid, with the goal of potentially cutting those numbers in half at any one time. It doesn't necessarily change the overall the chances of somebody coming into the school or coming into the classroom with the virus, but what it can do is reduce the potential number that are exposed because they're further apart. So if you could actually, get 6 feet distance between each of the students, then according to the CDPHE definition of exposure or close contact, they wouldn't need to be quarantined. In most of these classes, both at the middle and the high school level, where you see numbers, say, much above low 20s, there are likely to be students that are less than 6 feet. And therefore, if someone in the classroom did test positive or was presumed positive, then we would use a seating chart to identify which students were within less than 6 feet. And a class period is typically more than 15 minutes, so they would be considered to have had close contact. And so by having more students in the room, the disadvantage of that is that you potentially have more that need to be shifted to remote learning than you would if you had half the number in the class and you were able to have greater distance. So we just made the decision that guaranteeing a disruption to students' learning and guaranteeing more work for the teacher by having a hybrid model where you have, say, half the kids in on one day and the other half on another day, and when they're not in school, they're learning at home through some version of synchronous or asynchronous, that's clearly a disruption to the learning process. And rather than guarantee it up front, that we would do everything possible to mitigate both the the spread of any virus that comes into the school, as well as trying to prevent it from coming in, and then realizing that there might need to be more people that are shifted to remote for up to 14 days because of that. But then to try to mitigate the disruption of that, that's why we've instituted a fairly robust and minimally diminished alternative for remote learning, which is our live streaming of the actual classroom to the students that are learning at home. So that it's kind of like if you're traveling along the highway, you take the frontage road for that period while you're learning at home. And maybe you have to shift from fourth gear to third gear, but you don't have to stop. You don't have to go along a different path. And then you rejoin your classmates basically on the same trajectory, and you've gotten the same instruction that they have in class. So that's been kind of the way to mitigate the potential of having to shift more kids to remote because we've got more kids in the class. The other thing, we didn't know when we went into this, but we do now know after 9 weeks, we've had two students and one staff member come into our schools in 9 weeks with the virus. A total of 9 students were shifted from in-person to remote as a result of that, because they were clearly in close contact. But that's been the extent of students who have been impacted by in-school spread of the virus, exposure, because there has been no spread of the virus in school. Nobody has got the virus from being exposed at school. We've had quite a few other students, dozens is my guess. I don't have the number off the top of my head. Lori Clark, our district nurse, is keeping track of it. Dozens who have been shifted to remote because they've been exposed outside the school, primarily through families. So a family member gets it maybe because of their work. There was a case where somebody worked for a nursing home, was asymptomatic, got a test, showed up positive, and so the people in that family had to quarantine, and there were some members of the family who attended our schools. And so that kind of thing has been happening throughout the school year. But the fact that we've had some of these larger class sizes hasn't really caused much disruption to the school and really allowed kids to get the best possible education by being with their teachers physically every day and also being with their classmates, which is really important because there's a lot of both motivation to learn, engagement around learning, and actual learning from other students, not just from the teacher. So that's what we really wanted to offer students was the richest and most dynamic and engaging learning environment possible, which is in person. The high school numbers are here. There's a lot of numbers here. You can see that we sometimes have some very small classes, like portfolio art 3D, 2 students. AP studio art 2D, 2-dimensional, 1 student. Sometimes when you see these smaller numbers, there are multiple classes that are taught at the same time in the same classroom by the same teacher. So that the class might have 1 student that's taking 1 class, 2 students that are taking another class, and 8 students that are taking a third class, and the teacher is working with all of them on their particular curriculum. So you wouldn't necessarily see a one-on-one with, say, AD Art Studio. But we really are able to offer our students a wider range of courses by being able to offer something specific to much smaller numbers by keeping them together in the same class period. As you can see, we are offering things that I think this summer there was a question. We have quite a few music classes here: music theory, bel canto, chamber choir, choraleers, jazz choir, concert orchestra, jazz ensemble, concert band, and piano. Have quite a few students. I'm just glancing at that, probably easily 100 students that are participating in music. They are generally wearing masks. If they're blowing on a wind instrument, they most likely aren't. The teachers have done an amazing job of taking what has seen as best practice with playing instruments or with singing, while also mitigating the risk of spread, and been able to offer these classes. And it's just been inspiring to me to see what the kids have been able to do. The orchestra concert a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I think we were 6 weeks in, as well as the choir concert, were really moving to see all the kids together, to see what they'd learned, to see how they were able to perform, and to realize that so many kids in Colorado didn't have that opportunity because they were either hybrid or just where they were remote. So, you know, kudos to our teachers for really figuring out how to keep these opportunities available for kids. So I'm just looking here. You can see all the classes. At the end of the report is the policy that serves as guidance for class sizes. And as I said, it serves as guidance. So again, this report will be available on the website within 24 to 48 hours for anyone in the public that wants to review it. And I'm happy to answer any questions from the board.
Anybody have any questions?
I did want to follow up on a question that I did get from a board member about Ron's report at the last meeting, where he talked about the projected enrollment numbers. And I think that he had projected approximately 27 students, a slight decline. And generally the way that we project is how many new kindergartners do we expect to have, and how many moving into first grade, and how many graduating seniors do we have, and what's the difference between that number. And we actually, you know, we'll see 100 or more students leave, or 100 or more join the district in any given year. But the difference between those two numbers, he calculated to be approximately 27. I think in addition to that, we had 80 something fewer students show up than we had anticipated. And again, just like this report, Shelley's been working on looking at that difference, and seeing if we can't explain what happened. Do we know where those students went? Do we know why we had a greater number or a lower number of students that enrolled than we had projected? And I have reports that I don't have summarized for you now, because we haven't really finished our analysis. But what I wanted to share with you is kind of what we've learned so far and how we're going about trying to answer this question. And one way to do it would be to say, every student in our district that was here last year that's not here this year, where did they go? And that would tell us, did they go to a neighboring district? Did they go out of state? Did they go to homeschool? Did they go to a private school? Or do we not know where they went? And we've been working on that. The shortcoming of that approach is that every year, so let's say that Ron, from a financial perspective, projects no change in our student count. So it stays flat. What would actually happen behind that number, I'll pick a number and say, you know, we would see 300 students leave the district and 300 students join the district, and the same number of kindergartners moving into first as we see seniors exiting. But the fact that the expected student count wouldn't change would not mean that there weren't any changes in movement in students. So to really answer the question of what's going on with 80 students not showing up that we expected, what we've been looking at is patterns in students that not only have left the district, but have joined the district. And what we've, and looking at trends over the last, this year and then three prior years to see how many students typically are leaving the district and how many students are joining the district. And is there any change in that pattern this year? And there was a change. And it was really only in one place, which was the students joining the district. So we saw fewer students join the district proportionally than we have in the past. So it's really, while we can look at why people left, those numbers really didn't deviate from the trend in the past. The number that did deviate was the number of students that typically join the district. So we saw fewer new students coming into the district than we have in the past. And we're trying to see if we can understand that a little bit better. We're not sure how reliable the information, I mean, it's kind of, it's hard to make a reliable hypothesis about that and test it. And so I think your guesses might be as good as ours, but
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
So when you say fewer students coming in, can you nail that down to kindergarten, or is it across the board? Because I mean, I could see with the way things are, parents holding their kids back a year.
Right. So let's see, I was going to see here.
They're questioning, should I hold my kid back or should I send him to kindergarten? Maybe with all the COVID stuff and since everything's weird, you hold him back for a year.
Right. And that's something that a lot of larger metro area districts have seen and reported. I can't tell you at this time whether that's
right.
that pattern has, that we parallel that pattern. And because we're still in progress with that analysis. So we can certainly look for that. And at the next board meeting, I can give you an update if we've seen any grade level patterns.
Yeah, I mean, you can if you want to. I just was something I was, it just kind of came to my mind, and you'll probably really see it next year because you might have a big influx of kids next year, who knows, but.
Right, right. And we would want to be prepared for that if that was the case.
That's so true.
But the decrease in new students from outside the, just new to our district. I mean, they don't necessarily have to be outside the district because it could be new and they're in the district. But that that I think that number was very close to the number of students that didn't show up that we expected to show up. So it was within 10 or 15, the numbers were very similar. So that seems to be more the source of the decrease than, for example, students leaving.
Okay.
Right.
That makes sense.
And I think that the number of students that we really don't know what happened to them was approximately 10. Kind of, we don't, you know, we what happens is when a student goes from, say, our district to another district, or to a private school, or even to homeschool, we typically get that information at some point through, say, a records request. Let's say to go to Lutheran. Lutheran will make a records request, and then we'll enter that into the system. So we know that they went to Lutheran, or we know that they went to Ponderosa, or they went to Nebraska, or whatever. And so it's approximately 10 students that we don't have an explanation for their exit, for the fact that they're not enrolled this year. So, pardon?
It has a question.
No, I was gonna say, are some of these numbers from the students that we are anticipating to come from Frontier?
No, I don't think so.
The numbers were low for what the registration at that time. So I didn't know if that was that.
Yeah, I can follow up with Ron. He makes a few. What he does is he rolls every grade level forward. So he'll take the kindergartners from Oldham to first grade and so forth. And I don't know how he rolled over the Frontier students into the high school, but we were getting information in the spring about that. So there could be some that we were expecting at the high school, but I don't have that number with me right now. I can provide that.
And then what about the kids that are on the online schooling? Do we not have those numbers, or are those numbers?
Those numbers are overall, as you could see in the elementary, they're included there in the report. We have approximately 150 students that are in the 100% online option. And they're spread out, not exactly evenly, but fairly proportionally, elementary, middle, and high school. We started out, before school started, we were above 200, like the week before, we were something like 210. So we saw somewhere between 50 and 60 students shift from 100% online back to in-person for one reason or another. The two main reasons that we heard was that the online experience wasn't what they expected it to be. Many people expected it to be what they had in the spring, in March, April, and May. And then the other reason is that we believe is, and we heard, was that the classroom experience was both more engaging and safer than people were expecting. And so when they saw that you could come back to school and that we were doing it successfully, and they heard, you know, what we were doing, how it was going, you know, kids' friends were going and it was all fine, that they said, you know, we'd rather, you know, we feel comfortable about what the schools are offering. And, you know, that may have been in combination with, we're not happy with the approach to learning that's online. Now clearly, that's also probably behind the 150 that are still there, some combination of either concern about the in-person, or they like the flexibility and what, you know, what they're getting from the online. So 150 is less than, it's somewhere between 8 and 9% of our population, which is a pretty good percentage. Meaning there are the districts like Cherry Creek is at 20%, Denver's somewhere 35 plus, and many of the larger districts were seeing more than double the numbers that we're seeing. Some of the smaller you get, the more remote you get, I think you can even see smaller numbers than we're seeing. Okay.
Is there something else, or was that all you had to?
Let me just think. I think that's all I had. I don't, if there's no more questions, that's all I have.
Okay. Kim, John, do you have any questions? You good, John?
I'm good. I don't have any questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Douglas.
Yep, you're welcome.
Okay, thanks, Douglas. So we'll move on to the consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve items 8.1 through 8.4?
I'll move.
Second. Did I count through?
Okay. Roll call, please.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Gutenberg?
Aye.
Dr. Fonbeller?
Yes.
Okay, we'll move on to the action items. We're going to go to first reading of revised policy. And if you guys are okay with it, we'll do some final on that one. Yeah, I see nods.
Yes.
Can I get a motion to approve for first and final reading KLG relations with state and local agencies?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, go ahead, Douglas.
Anybody else have
discussion? No.
A couple of things to point out. The old, the original title of the policy was relations with state agencies. And so one of the changes to this policy is to have it relations with state and local agencies. And the item 4 is a new item, development of an agreement with local law enforcement to implement a school resource officer program. And then subject to prior board review while maintaining the confidentiality of security arrangements, this agreement may define specific conditions pursuant to which law enforcement firearms may be safely stored on district property. So what's happening with this policy is that the board is authorizing, as a part of the school resource officer program, the ability with an agreement in place for local law enforcement to store firearms on district property. And the ability for the board, this board and future boards, to review that agreement. And while that agreement isn't part of policy, it is certainly something that this board and future boards could have not only just a chance to review, but a chance to weigh in on. And the that's the main thing I wanted to point out.
Okay.
And just because it'll come up next, and I don't need to, it doesn't need to be discussed then, but the legal counsel felt that this change should occur in this policy and not in the regulation, and that the regulation wasn't necessary. And so that's why there's also an action item to delete the regulation. It confuses things. It's not a recommended policy by CASB, and it just keeps things simpler. So.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, so roll call, please.
Director Hines.
Aye.
Director Gutenberg.
Aye.
Director Frumbeller.
Aye.
Okay, next one is 9.2, and this will be first and final because it's repealing the policy. So can I get a motion to approve repealing KLG-R-1, relations with local, county, and state agencies, police department regulations?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Frumbeller?
Yes.
Okay, we have no discussion items, so we'll move on to BOE planning. Our next meeting is Monday, November 9th. Are you all available? Okay. At least for this.
Okay. And then that'll have two showcases, the middle school, and I don't know which other school is slotted for that one, but it'll have a little bit longer up front.
Yeah, I'll have two sets of minutes to be approved as well.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So then can I get a motion? We need to move into executive session. Can I get a motion to move into executive session under safety and security CRS 24-6-402 4D for the discussion of matters specific to specialized details of security arrangements or investigations?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Okay. We're going to take a quick 2-minute break and continue on.
You have to vote. You have to take a roll call vote.
Oh, sorry. Can I get a roll call, please?
Director Hines.
Aye.
Director Gutenberg.
Aye.
Director Frumbeller.
Yes.
Now we'll take a quick 2-minute break and then we will move into executive session.